I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, words define us, the words that we choose and use, and the words that we love the mouthfeel of when we get to say them. Words connect us to each other and to our own past. It could be the past of our childhood or a past of thousands of years ago as language was first being minted. And so it's little wonder that we enjoy luxuriating in language, the odd phrases, the clever expressions, and some quirky words. Martha Barnett, co-host of the beloved public radio program Away with Words, has long been a guide for those who delight in the lushness of language. And her new book is Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. She deepens her exploration of words while also telling us her personal story, how she became a public radio worder. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Independent journalism needs protection, now more than ever. Leaving a gift to TPR in your will helps ensure thoughtful, fact-based news has a future in Texas. Learn more at tpr.org/legacy.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Sunday morning at 10 a.m., many of us have an appointment with Texas Public Radio. That's when we tune in for Friends with Words. That's when we tune in for Away with Words. And we listen to Martha Barnett. She's the co-host of the program. And we hear her giving this clear, informative, highly entertaining exploration of language. And we hang on every word. And Martha Barnett, welcome to The Source.
Hey, it's so good to be here.
So I do want to compliment you on your on-air personality and your presentation on air. You just come across so open, non-judgmental. You got a question about a word, there are no dumb questions, and you are just mellifluous on the air. I just got to tell you that.
Well, thank you so much, David. I mean, what Grant Barrett and I do on the show is a joy, and we learn so much from our listeners, you know, whether they're there in Texas or anywhere around the world, and it truly is a joy. Our show is all about the joy of exploring words and language in all its glory.
So, mellifluous, I didn't just pluck that word out of the air. That is something that you have said is one of your favorite words, might still be your favorite word of all time, but I'm sure that the most recent word discovery is your new favorite word. So talk about the word mellifluous and how did that, what does it mean? And I mean, I do think it perfectly describes you, but go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Well, mellifluous is a lovely word. I mean, it's one of those words that actually sounds like what it is. Mellifluous describes a sweet voice or a lovely tone, like somebody playing the flute. And what's really wonderful about the word mellifluous is that it comes from two Latin words that literally mean flowing with honey, which I think is so picturesque. You know, Ralph Waldo Emerson said language is fossil poetry. And I think that's a wonderful example. I mean, there's a poem tucked inside the word mellifluous. And on top of that, it's a wonderful word to just kind of roll around on your tongue and say. But, you know, your listeners who speak Spanish will recognize the Spanish word that's related to that, miel, you know, meaning honey. So mellifluous is indeed one of my favorite words.
But you are so good on the air, and you had a crisis when you were like thinking about becoming a public radio person. You weren't sure that this was going to be a good fit. I find that hard to believe, but how did that work out? I mean, so you were a writer in Kentucky, and then they came a calling. I mean, so talk about that.
Well, yes, for many, many years, I was in my native Kentucky writing books about word origins. I loved the study of word origins, and I had a fantastic tutor when I was in college and almost flunked out of my ancient Greek class, and he taught me, he was an immigrant from Latvia, and he taught me about how to look at language as from a 30,000 foot view, actually, because he was a polyglot and he spoke at least 12 languages. And so he taught me ancient Greek in relation to other languages, because nearly half the world's population speaks a language that comes from this ancient prehistoric root. So that means that Russian and Italian and German and Irish and English and Greek are all related, and you can start to see those connections.
Yeah, he was able to give you the bird's eye view, but when we're going to school, they give us the worm's eye view, you know.
Yeah,
and everything seems like so overwhelming and overpowering. How am I ever going to learn this?
Yes, exactly. You're trying to memorize these vocabulary lists and these seemingly arbitrary rules of grammar. And he was pointing out connections between and among words, like between English and Spanish, you know, father and padre. Those go back to the same common root, for example. Same with the German word, Vater. But anyway, I started learning language that way, and I started writing books about word origins. And to get back to your question, I had a terrible public speaking phobia. I mean, it was almost comical, you know, in a fetal position all day before I had to talk about my books, and just awful. And so when KPBS, the station that was producing the show at the time in San Diego, came looking for somebody who could talk about word origins, I thought, well, I have the word origins, but I sure don't have the talking. And I was terrified to try out for this radio show, but I thought, gosh, you know, if I can talk about my passion every week to fellow word nerds, you know, people who would actually enjoy that, you know, maybe I could get over it. Maybe I could leap and the net would appear, and it did.
But what happened eventually to the gig at KPBS?
Well, yes, that was back, I joined the show in 2004. And everything was fine for a while, but the recession came along in 2007, and KPBS just simply didn't have the money to continue to produce the show. You know, it was really tough on public radio shows then. And so they canceled our show and another local news show. And my co-host, Grant Barrett, who is a professional lexicographer, he writes dictionaries for a living, and our intrepid producer, Stephanie Levine, and I just thought, well, wait a minute, this is too good, this is too important. The feedback we get from listeners, the contributions that they make to the show, and the things that they teach us about language all the time, this is too good. We've got to figure out a way to keep producing the show, which, you know, if I think about it now, it was definitely naive of us, but it was also, you know, really passionate. We're going to put on a show one way or another. And so we formed a tiny nonprofit with the support of some of our listeners, and listeners stepped up to contribute to the nonprofit. And we had a lot of rough years, a lot of lean years, but our love of language and talking about language and learning about language and talking with public radio listeners. You know, public radio listeners have such curious minds, and they appreciate the kinds of conversations that you hear on a station like this. And so somehow we kept going, and I ended up writing the book, Friends with Words, in part because it dawned on me I had been doing this 20 years. If you had told me years ago that I would be doing a public radio show for 20 years, I would have thought you were.
And now, you know, it's just blue skies from now on with public radio, you know, nothing in at all on the horizon that's looming and looks dark at all.
Yeah, no worries at all.
but speaking of that, any CPB concerns for Away with Words?
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
That is now, on his way out, and, you know, they're getting rid of, they're closing up shop, and the retraction of public radio funding. And does that, I mean, you're on, what is it, 80 stations across the country?
You know, I lose count. I tend to say we're on in 44 states because I just don't keep track of that. But of course, it's really, really concerning to see what is happening with funding for public radio stations. And, you know, the thing is, with our show, we've been doing this show on a shoestring forever. We, this little nonprofit that produces the show, distributes Away with Words for free to any public radio station that wants it. That's been our business model from day one, which is kind of questionable, but we felt so strongly in our educational mission and the fact that we could get public radio listeners to help us out there and keep us going. But yeah, it's so concerning on so many levels that especially stations in smaller areas, in rural areas, might end up suffering as a result of all this.
Yeah, I discovered your program Away with Words in 2013, and I was just looking at other stations' schedules to see what else is good out there. What can we pilfer to put on our air? And I saw the program, and I thought, this is really good. This is perfect for public radio. And I brought it to our general manager at the time, and then they were like, well, you know, I don't know, and we'll give it a listen. And then, yeah, they thought it was great, and we've had it on the air since. And it's just been, you know, part of many people's Sunday morning. You know, they do the crossword, they listen to Away with Words. It's all, you know, part of their routine. It's just, I can't imagine not doing it, not having it.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that, David. And thank you so much for being an advocate for the show. I think that a lot of times people think, well, you know, what is there to talk about on a show about language? You know, is it grammar? Are they going to wrap my knuckles with a ruler if I say the wrong thing? But there is so much to explore when it comes to language, whether it's, you know, idioms or as you said, that weird thing your grandma said, or regional dialects or linguistic diversity, word origins, slang. There's so much to talk about.
Right. I'm sure people were saying, well, how long could this show go on? I mean, there's only so many words, you know, and it's like, well, I think this show could go on forever. But we're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. If you want to give Martha Barnett a word or two, if you want to, you know, share some words with her, have words at her, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And of course, you can find they have a plethora of archived shows of Away with Words at their website, which is what's the wayward.org, or what is the website?
Yeah, waywardradio.org. And I'm so glad you used the word plethora. That was originally a medical term used to describe an infusion of liquid.
Yeah, that's one of those words that I use that I have no idea what it means, but it sounds really good. And so I'm going to take a break here, and we're going to come back continuing talking with Martha Barnett from Away with Words. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Martha Barnett. You know her, you love her from her program, Away with Words. She is a co-host on that program every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. with Grant Barrett. Also, she has a new book out, and Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. And she's here to take your calls and questions. Give us a call, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Rick. And Rick, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I would like for her to define the word megalomaniac and possibly give an example of someone that might be a megalomaniac.
All right, Rick, thank you for that. And so, Martha, what a megalomaniac? What is the word origin of all that?
Yeah, well, if you think about the megalo part, that means like a really large thing, you know, megalocephaly is having a large head, and megalomaniac is, I think we all know that it has to do with somebody who is extremely egotistical.
And we hear this word quite a lot these days. Words come in and out of fashion quite a bit. I mean, it's interesting. I like to read really old magazines from like Harper's from like 100 years ago, and to see how the language that they use and the words that they choose. And it's interesting how, maybe they grew up on the New England Reader or something when they were schooled on how to write. But we don't talk that way anymore. What happened?
What happened to what?
Why has our language changed so much?
Oh well, language changes all the time. It's sort of like an organism, you know, it's constantly evolving, you know, whether you're talking about just a few years ago or centuries ago. I mean, you go back to the time of Beowulf, you know, the first line of Beowulf is "Hwat way gotter than a yardagum," and it goes on and on like that, which doesn't sound like modern English. And so language changes all the time. And if enough people start using a certain word or a certain pronunciation or grammatical construction, you know, that's or the word or the idiom is going to find its way into dictionaries because dictionary editors, lexicographers are constantly monitoring the language to report on it. They are not prescribing how to speak, but yeah, language is changing all the time.
Let's go to another caller. We have Zach. And Zach, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi, Martha Martin, and I think you and your co-hosts there are absolutely fantastic. I hear you as often as I can. I don't really have a word to ask you about, but I'm wondering little phrases that people use. I guess they're called colloquialisms. Is that correct? And like things like, you know, I want a budget, and that's so expensive. It's higher than a cat's back, or that he's tighter than the bark on a tree. Where do all those little sayings come from?
All right, Zach, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it. And Martha.
Yeah, thank you, Zach. Well, humans are endlessly creative. And, you know, when you talk about something expensive, I haven't heard that one about higher than a cat's back, but it makes perfect sense, doesn't it? It's an idiom that's very visual. And, you know, if you go to the Pacific Northwest, the term that you're going to hear for expensive is spendy. I never heard that term until I joined the show, spendy, you know, like you spend a lot of money. But, you know, humans are endlessly creative. And, I mean, think about little kids. You know, kids are constantly coming up with terms that end up staying in the family familect, as linguists call it, the language that families use. I mean, kids are very inventive. I remember the woman who called into the show and said that they couldn't figure out why their little boy was talking about the having it, have in it. He was talking about the cabinet, of course. And so that's what that family continued to use, you know, for the rest of the little boy's childhood, because it makes perfect sense. It's very visual and evokes exactly what he was trying to say.
People have been theorizing and projecting that because of modern media, that we're going to lose many of our regional dialects. Everyone is, you know, I grew up in South Texas, and the way I talk on the radio is not the way I spoke when as a child, you know, and you have to try to filter out some of your, you know, local yodel, you know, manners of speaking. So, but that is, I don't think that's actually happening. Do you think that's happening?
To some degree it is. I mean, and it makes me very sad to think about words and phrases that might be dying out with this generation or the next. You know, I think about the term Baba Sheely, which I love, which you'll hear in Mississippi for a really good friend. That comes from a Choctaw term, Baba Sheely, which I really like. But, you know, not that many people use it that much anymore. But dialects are changing to some degree. I mean, the Southern dialect, the classical Southern dialect, is changing to some degree, but it's just going to be a different Southern dialect. There's a lot of research going on right now about how folks in Georgia don't really sound so much like their parents anymore. But you know, and that's kind of a loss. But other dialects will replace those.
But do you think do we have an urban dialect versus a rural dialect that people who live in urban areas will try to filter out the regionalisms and the rural areas seem to you know, languish in it?
Yeah, I'm not sure that people try intentionally to filter out dialect, although you did talk about how you changed the way that you talk, right?
Yep.
To some degree?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. And you're from Kentucky, and you probably were, mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, I was exposed to my folks and how they spoke, and, you know, you learn how, you know, when I was growing up, I was really confused at how to learn to spell the word wash. And I thought, where's the R in there?
Yeah, where's the R, right?
It should be wash.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm from Louisville, Kentucky, which is an interesting little dialect area, because the northern part of the city went with the Union, and the southern part of the city went with the Confederacy. And so people talk a little bit differently depending on what part of the city you're from. I'm from the same part of the city where Jennifer Lawrence is from and Diane Sawyer. And we don't sound quite as southern as the folks in the other part of the city, but my dad was from Appalachia and my mom was from southwestern Virginia. And I definitely didn't end up talking with a dialect that sounds as strong as theirs did.
Your father has a fascinating story about mm-hmm. being a textile worker as a child. And then late in his teens, I think he's 18, he went back to high school, and he later became a college professor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, my dad was born in a log cabin in the mountains of North Carolina and worked in a textile mill before child labor laws, and worked there for years and years and years, and then had a religious conversion and decided he wanted to be a Baptist preacher, and went on to Wake Forest University and ended up teaching at the Baptist Seminary there in Louisville for many, many years. And he was somebody who was kind of saved by books. You know, he loved books. I mean, we added one room onto the house to accommodate all his books, and then we had to add another room because the books really fed him. You know, he was such a hungry mind, and he was working in this deafening textile mill, just doing boring work every day for 6 years until he got a Bible and a small dictionary that he kept at his workstation and studied until he got out of there.
We seem to have media definitely impact the language choices that we make. And I'm wondering how AI is going to be impacting our language. Certainly if we spoke like AI, we'd all sound kind of nutty. You know, the peanut butter sandwich isn't just a sandwich. It's a triumph of culinary, you know, it's just in how AI writes. It's kind of like, whoa. So how do you think, you know, how is AI going to impact language?
Oh boy, don't we all wonder about that one. I had my nephew, who went to TCU, by the way, there in Texas. My nephew was here yesterday visiting from New York, and he teaches college students. And he was saying that he teaches English to college students. And he was saying every essay he gets, he knows that it was written by AI. And you know, because sometimes the students accidentally leave their prompts in there.
They need AI to help them in their cheating. So, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the jury is still out on this. I mean, there's been work done on the fact that there are certain words that are kind of telltale words that show up in AI, like the word delve, which I've always liked the word delve. You know, we're going to delve into language, but now that's supposedly a telltale sign of AI use, or the use of M dashes, you know, those long dashes.
Yeah, a lot of dashes. That's always, you know, this is AI. You know, it doesn't like, I guess AI doesn't like commas.
Well, yeah, and it's not. It's me writing this on my own. So yeah, I think we're all sort of watching the use of AI with trepidation. I feel like it's got so much potential when it comes to medical research, but I have a sort of love-hate relationship with it.
We have a love-love relationship with you, Martha Barnett, and your program, Away with Words. It's share that love with your co-host, Grant Barrett, and your new book, Friends with Words, Adventures in Language Land. It is a joy to read, a memoir also, talk about word origins and how we get them. And it was so much fun to have you on. Sorry we didn't get to have you on longer.
No worries. Grant and I would love to come back to San Antonio. You know, we did something with San Antonio Youth Literacy at St. Philip's a few years ago and had a wonderful time. So maybe we can work that out one of these days.
All right. We'll try to get that. All right. Martha Burnett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.